So I heard from various devotees that they were a little disappointed that there was no daily Bhagavatam class here. Of course, there are many seminars throughout the day, but I thought at least for a couple of days I'd speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, some selected verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. So those who like to have a Bhagavatam class can have one at some time in the day. Yeah, again, just to add to that note, I was supposed to be speaking on Dharma. Well, this is all Bhagavat Dharma, so it's not outside the topic of Dharma, although maybe not so specifically examining the topic of Dharma. But anyway, I think it's not a bad idea to have some basic things discussed, because it seems to me that it would be more suitable to speak some very basic things here, because there are many exalted topics, and it's good to have some basic topics also. Make the foundation strong. And then whatever else is up, that can remain very strong. So, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text Number 1, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Nayang deho deha bhajang driloke kashtan kaman arhate virbujam ye tapo divyang putrakayena sattvam shudhyed yasmad brahma sokyang twanantam. Lord Rishabhdev told his sons, "My dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified. And when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever." In this verse, Lord Rishabhdev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word dehabhak refers to anyone who accepts a material body, but the living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals like dogs and hogs enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. At the same time, they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. After all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness. But as long as one is encaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. A higher sense is present in the human form. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. It is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, bhakti yoga should be taught. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or dog. The instructions of Rishabhdev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train, and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office he works hard from 9 to 5, then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex. Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham hi tucham. Rishabhdev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hogs. Indeed, dogs and hogs do not have to work so hard for sex. A human being should try to live in a different way and should not try to imitate dogs and hogs. The alternative is mentioned. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. By taking to bhakti yoga, devotional service, one's existence is purified. The living entity is seeking happiness life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he immediately becomes eligible to return home back to Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma cha me devyam evang yoveti tatvataha tyaktva dehang punarajanma naiti mameti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Nayang deho deha bhajang reloke kashtan kaman arhate virbhujang ye tapo devyang putraka yena sattvam Shudhid yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. Om agyanati virandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri taitanya mano bhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayang rupa kadamai hyang dadati svapadantikam. Vandeham shri guru shri atapata kamalam shri guru na vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tata Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya. Ancha Kalpaturupyascha. Kripa Sindhubi Evacha Potitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted often and lectured on often at public pandal program. Pandal means a big tent. At big programs in India, in Hyderabad, in other places, Prabhupada would lecture on this verse. Very strong. It's very strong words, no doubt. But it's true. In the present age, there's a lot of talk that we should just speak gently and mildly. Because maybe the feeling is that life by its nature is so tough, so difficult, that we should try to make it softer by speaking very softly. That's also stated in Manu Sanghita. Manu Sanghita is the primary book for behavior in human society. So Manu Maharaj says, Satyang Bruyat Priyang Bruyat Ma Bruyat Satyam Apriyam. He says that one should speak the truth and one should speak in a Priya, in an agreeable manner. And one should avoid speaking even truths which are disagreeable. In other words, keep the atmosphere nice. But, however, Prabhupada commented that this is an instruction for general human dealings, but when it comes to discussing the absolute truth, we should not compromise matters for the sake of making it agreeable. Because the truth, the absolute truth, is more important than social niceties. So you see here that Rishabhdev is speaking the facts of life to his sons, his 100 sons. He's speaking about the reality of this material world. It's the father's duty to educate his sons, particularly in the purpose of life. On the very old Back to Godheads, even before I joined, it must have been about 73 or 4, on the back page, they had a photo of a young man, his head, facing eye to eye, a young baby. And then it wrote, underneath it was written, that what will you tell your son when he asks you about the purpose of life? And then it was an advertisement for Bhagavad Gita as it is. What will you tell your son? Mostly they just avoid. Or anyway, the children, by the time they should, usually children ask these good questions. But I think they don't nowadays, because from about the age of 3 they're playing computer games and their intuitive intelligence. Children generally have an intuitive intelligence for inquiring into the most important questions. Often if we go to schools with 8-year-old and 9-year-old children, they often ask much better questions than the adults, actually. If you go to the universities, the people 20 years old, they ask all stupid questions. If you go among 8-year-old and 9-year-old children, they often ask very good questions. What is the meaning of life? Who is God? How can we understand who is God? Like this. So these questions will arise generally because the fathers are murhas. They want to convert their children into murhas. They have no idea what the purpose of life is beyond ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So they often tell the children that it's a silly question. And when you grow up, you'll understand that this is a silly question. And as Prabhupada points out here, by the time they've been through the educational system, a few years of the educational system, and they'd stop asking questions like that. That's why Prabhupada called the modern schools slaughterhouses. It's a very strong term. When you send your children to school, and they learn all the things they need to live in the world. Prabhupada called it a slaughterhouse because it slaughters people's spiritual propensities. That's why a child goes in at a young age and they have these natural questions. It will naturally arise then, what is the purpose of life? Who is God? Where is God? How can we understand God? These questions naturally arise in children, and education means to send the children to someone who can answer these questions and bring out this propensity more and more and more. But modern education means put them in a school and crush them with materialistic knowledge so that they will not ask such questions, so that such questions will be crushed out of their consciousness. and they will become good mudhas, stool eaters, just like. So Rishabhdev is speaking to his sons. Rishabhdev is not a teacher of the modern age. He is not a new age guru. He's an old age guru, the real guru. He is Adi Guru, Jagat Guru. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he's taking the role of an ordinary person, of a Kshatriya. And later he took the role of an Avadhut. That means a sadhu who simply forgets, or he doesn't have any touch with human society. He wanders around naked, simply absorbed in thoughts of the Absolute Truth. So before retiring from his position as king of the world, Rishabhdev is instructing his 100 sons in the science of the Absolute Truth, and he's telling them the facts of life. What is the reality of this world? What is the actual nature of this world? So generally a father, if he's at some point, he may sit down his child. I don't know if people do this these days, but they sit down their child and say, "Listen, son, this world's a tough place. You gotta," and then he'll tell him, "You know, you gotta be tough, and you gotta so that you can survive in this world." But Rishabhdev, he's telling his sons, "Listen, sons, this world is a tough place. You gotta be tough. Not so that you can survive in this place, so you can get out of this place. This world is by nature very austere and difficult," that he's telling. "But don't try to make it into a place of enjoyment. Why is it so difficult? Because we are trying to enjoy it. But where is the enjoyment? What is the enjoyment in material life? Eating, sleeping, mating. These are the enjoyments." But Rishabhdev is pointing out that even the hogs and dogs who eat stool have this. You don't see hogs or dogs eating stool in this country. You don't see hogs much. They're all on, maybe, but they're all away on farms. In the more advanced countries of the Western countries, you don't see. They're all inside factory farms. You don't see pigs in the fields. Do you see them here still? Not much. They're all in factory farms. And they don't feed them stool. Maybe they do, we don't know. But at least if they do, we haven't heard about it yet. But in India, you see that. Hogs eating stool. It's not just something like very unusual either. It's just an everyday thing. People pass stool in the field or the side of the road and the hogs come and eat it. And dogs also sometimes. Not so much. You don't see dogs eating stool much, but sometimes. Sometimes. They don't eat pigs like human stool. They don't like cow stool or something. Sometimes you see dogs eating like buffalo stool or something like that. You know, they have different tastes a little bit. So, anyway, Rishabhdev is pointing out that sense gratification, whatever it may be, it's just like that of the hogs and dogs, which is disgusting. If we think eating stool, isn't that disgusting? They used to do this in the concentration camps. We've heard stories in Russia and in Germany. They used to do this. They used to force people to eat stool because just like just to humiliate them so much. Or I was reading when I was a kid. I was reading it. Someone had been in a Stalinist camp. And people were eating stool because there wasn't much else to eat. So just to survive, they were eating stool. So let me think about this. Sounds very horrible. But the hogs and dogs, they eat that and they actually take pleasure in that. So Rishabhdev is pointing out, that's the nature of the material world. Now, if you want to enjoy material life with unrestricted sense gratification, then what will happen is we will end up in that situation. We've already been a pig, and we'll become a pig again. There's a story in the Mahabharata of Indra. He was trying to stop one sage, one rishi, from going to the heavenly planets. And, you know, his usual method. And then he was... No, actually, I'm getting a little mixed up here. Indra was feeling very proud that I am Indra. I'm so great, I'm the king of the universe. So there was some rishi there with Indra, and there were some ants crawling by. When you see ants, they often go in large groups. So hundreds of ants. And then the rishi started laughing and said, "Why are you laughing? I'm laughing seeing the ants. What's so funny?" He said, "Because they were all Indras previously." Now you are Indra. You're thinking you are so great. See all these ants? They were all those Indras previously. And you'll also be one of these ants again. And they'll also be Indra again. And after millions and billions and trillions of lives, they may again become Indra. But more quickly you will become an ant. This is material life. So material life is by its very nature full of suffering. Now, Rishabhdev is recommending accept more suffering. Tapaha. Tapaha means suffering. It literally means heat. Just like here we have some heat. We're feeling it's suffering. People come to the Adriatic coast. One of the main reasons they come is because of the heat. They don't go to the Baltic coast so much. Of course they also go there, but generally the people prefer to come to the Adriatic coast, or if there's the Barents Sea that's up on the Arctic Circle. We don't find thousands of people driving their cars up to the north of Finland or to be in the Arctic Circle. There's not just the sea. They want the heat. But then when it becomes too hot, now we're feeling it's too hot, then it becomes suffering. So, suffering. Rishabhdev is pointing out that this material world is full of suffering. Yes, okay, we accept that. Then what should we do? Accept more suffering. Doesn't seem to make any sense. This material world is full of suffering, and therefore I am advising, Rishabhdev says, you should accept more suffering. What is the purpose of that? The purpose is to accept that kind of suffering that is called tapasya, by which one will be accept a regulated kind of suffering, by which one will be freed from the propensity to try to enjoy this material world. And that will open the doors to the spiritual world, to spiritual existence. So he's recommending that anyway, material life is full of suffering. If we try to enjoy sense gratification, that will result in suffering. And even if we don't try to enjoy sense gratification, we still have to suffer. If we engage in sense gratification, that leads to more suffering. The more sense gratification we engage in, the more suffering we suffer. Just like, especially if one engages in illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, eating foods which are not supposed to be eaten by human beings, then there are severe sinful reactions. One has to suffer. For instance, if one eats, cooks, serves, approves of the slaughter, slaughters, there are eight kinds of those who engage in meat eating and the peripheral, those who kill, those who approve of the killing, those who serve it, those who cook it, those who eat it, and those who sell it. And so all these people, they are implicated in the sin of animal slaughter, and especially for beef eaters, they will have to suffer in hell for as many thousands of years as there are hairs on the body of a cow for that sin of meat eating. So for that little bit of meat, you know, they have potatoes, and I don't know how you eat it in this country, but in England, then where I come from, they're not very imaginative. It's usually, well, now they eat pizzas and all this, but when I was a kid, it was a pile of potatoes and some meat, and that was it. That was maybe some carrots also. So that little bit of meat, and there's some feel the blood, and there's rakshasa kind of pleasure in eating meat. But for that, one has to suffer so much. It seems disproportionate. It seems that the punishment should be commensurate to the crime. It seems disproportionate. Just for a little bit of meat, you have to suffer so much. Such are the laws of nature. So if one engages in sinful life, one has to suffer very severely. But even if one doesn't engage in grossly sinful life, or even if one is pious, pious means following these principles and maybe following the principles of karmakanda given in the Vedic literatures, offering sacrifices, going to the heavenly planets which are full of enjoyment. Here in this world there is illicit sex. That is cause of suffering. If one has sex outside wedlock, this is the main form of illicit sex. It's also said to be illicit sex even within wedlock, if it is not indulged in for the specific purpose of procreating children. But even then, the illicit sex life within marriage is always better than outside of marriage. I'm not trying to condone it, but sex life outside of marriage is particularly sinful. So if one goes to the heavenly planets, you can do almost the same thing. There are apsaras, which are there like, as Prabhupada describes, they're like the prostitutes of the heavenly planets. And you don't become sinful by indulging with them. Those who have male bodies. And those who have female bodies, they're apsaras. And they're simply enjoying sex. But it's not enjoyment. They're not enjoying. It's not actual enjoyment. That's described by Prahlad Maharaj, that... what is that? How does that say? Heard of happiness. Shuta sukha. He says that it is so-called happiness. It means we have heard that it is... the happiness in this mature world is happiness. We've heard that. It's advertised like that. That, you know, you drink this beer or take this pill, this LSD or this ecstasy, and it'll be really enjoyable, or enjoy this sex and it'll be really enjoyable. And everyone is making propaganda amongst the materialistic people, saying this is really good. And then when you take a pill like LSD and something happens, and we presume, oh, this is enjoy. It's not actually enjoyable. It's just what it is. It's just there's a euphoria which is different from our daily humdrum existence. The adrenaline gets going, and maybe with LSD some other chemicals too get going in the brain. I'm not an expert in this, but different chemicals get going, and it creates a sensation. In sex life, different hormones get active, and it's a sensation. It's called sense gratification, because there's a sensation. Just like driving fast in a car, there's a sensation. It feels exciting. It's different. It's different to our ordinary life of just sitting and eating some sausages. They might be vegetarian sausages. Nowadays there are vegetarian sausages. If anyone wants to enjoy the taste of meat and blood in vegetarian food, you can. Vegetarian sausages. Rejoice. Vegetarian wise. Anyway, there's a sensation, and because it's different from just normal ordinary life, then this is advertised as happiness. But it's, as Prahlad Maharaj very rightly points out, it's advertised as happiness, because everyone says, well, this is happiness when you can drive fast in a car and enjoy beautiful women and you can eat vegetarian sausages and all these things there. They advertise it, just like on TV, they advertise. All these advertisements, they're just so ridiculous. I mean, I can't... It's just unbelievable how stupid people are. And the advertisements work, otherwise they wouldn't show them. It works. People are so stupid. They say, use this. What kind of soap do you have here? Persil. Do you have Persil soap here? Use Persil and your life will be happy, 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 happy. Persil, Persil, Persil. And it's just so ridiculous. But it works. People buy it. Otherwise, they wouldn't show it on TV. But if people were just stop, people don't think. The TV and the modern education system, it's designed to make you not think. It fills your head with information, all useless information. But it's designed to make you not think. Actually thinking, just like you may do a degree in mathematics, you definitely have to think to do a degree in mathematics, for instance. So you have to think. But it diverts our tendency to think. It diverts it away from the real thing we should be thinking about, what is the ultimate purpose of life, and makes us think on about all kinds of different things. Just like they have democracy, and then they have newspapers and people are discussing, well, you see, which party should we elect to cheat us next, and this party or that party, which will be the best, and what will be his policy, and everyone's thinking. But it's all superficial to the real thing we should be thinking about. What is the purpose of life? So even in the heavenly plans, we may be enjoying, or someone may have... Actually, in Kali Yuga on this planet, there's... Even in other yugas, some people might have been enjoying to some extent. But in this Kali Yuga, it's so gross. Life is so... crass. People are not, there's not even a semblance. Well, I guess there is some semblance of happiness because people are going after it, but that there is suffering is very, very strongly apparent. But even if one is enjoying in the heavenly planets, that's also suffering. Even if one is not suffering being thrown into hell and tortured and eating stool, still there is suffering because we have to suffer birth and death. Even Indra has to suffer eventually death and then come down and become a blade of grass or something like that and get eaten by a cow, and then the cow gives some milk and the human being drinks it, and Indra enters the semen of a man and then gets injected into a woman and then takes birth. So the one who is Indra, and then he just becomes another Croatian or Dutchman or whatever. So material life is by nature full of suffering. And Rishabhdev is recommending suffering you cannot avoid, but accept that kind of suffering which will be beneficial to us, ultimately beneficial to us. This may seem to be a strange topic to speak of at the beach. But people come here for enjoyment. Generally, preaching is better, we're told, in the winter months. Because in the summer, people are too much in the mode of enjoyment. They feel, I'm enjoying. It's so nice. There's the sun and the beach and... what else? The wine. Huh? What? Stone. There's no beach here, right? Anyway, I don't know, it's pretty difficult to think what they're enjoying. But anyway, they think they're enjoying. And there's wine and... you don't have to go to work, that's it. You're free for 2 weeks a year to lie on the beach, no work. And then you sit in your car and drive home, roasted in the car. It's 40 degrees outside, it must be 55 inside. And the kids are screaming and the dog is and you're in a traffic, 300 kilometer long traffic jam. Sometimes it becomes like that. So but you can, in the meantime, they have the radio on, and now for the latest song from the radio is going on with all this music. Life is so wonderful. Sukha-sukha, shuta-sukha, heard of happiness. And then you have to go to the psychologist, you know. I can't work it out, you know, I feel so frustrated. I can't fit into life. I mean, what's wrong with me? I mean, everyone else looks so happy, and why am I miserable? And the psychologist, you know, he has this, it's the same thing everyone says. So he just says this, well, you know, you have to just become more at one with yourself and find the real inner you and have some more sex and, you know, and that'll be $100. Okay. Oh no, I can't afford it. So this is material life. In the modern age, it's very, very apparent. People are suffering so much. I mean, we can laugh, but it's a cause of distress also. You see, like Prabhupada, he would discuss with his disciples about the materialists and they'd laugh like anything. But at the same time, Prabhupada, he was laughing, but very compassionate. Prabhupada is describing in this purport how people, they have to go to work 2 or 3 hours standing in a train, and then they have to go on a bus to the office, and they have to work hard doing some job they don't like to do, and then they go back. And for all this, their only happiness is a little sex at life. So actually, Prabhupada is feeling extremely compassionate at how people are suffering. They're suffering so much. Their whole life is being spent without any purpose. Hari hari bifale janama goaino. Manusha janama paya radha krishna. Nabhojiya janiya shunya bisha kainu. Narottam Das says that, my dear Lord Hari, I've got this valuable human form of life, but I simply wasted it because I did not worship Radha and Krishna. Therefore, I'm knowingly drinking poison. But most people in the modern age, they don't even know. They have no idea that there is any higher purpose of life. And they just presume that normal life means to just to work, 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 have 2 weeks holiday a year, and, I don't know, go to a football game or a go-kart game or whatever it is. This is human life. That's it. And then you say, well, you're going to die. And you say, yeah, okay. It's natural. But then after that, well, there's nothing after that. Or we'll go to church on Sunday. And then we'll go to heaven. And then what will we do in there? Well, I guess it'll be, heaven's like the Adriatic coast. And you just sit on the beach and, you know, and what? Sit on the beach, lie on the beach all day, and then go to the restaurant at night and have a little sex, and that's it. That must be heaven. So people are very much, very much misguided. They don't know. They don't know what is the Nate vidu swarate kating hi Vishnu. Prabhupada quotes in just up here. They don't know that the purpose of life is Vishnu. They have no idea that this one should restrain the senses and accept voluntary suffering. Voluntary suffering, why accept more suffering? Well, there's a certain kind of suffering, accepting which will help us to understand the Absolute Truth. Although material life is full of suffering, yet one should accept suffering. Here, Prabhupada describes suffering as austerities and penances. So I was just trying to think, what does this mean, austerities and penances? It sounds like almost the same thing. In your language also? Austerity and penance. It seems like to be the same thing, doesn't it? Askesis, do you say? Strogosti. And that's Russian, askesis. Strogosti, it sounds pretty tough. And what's the other word? Pokor. Lying on the beach, becoming a stool pokora. Pokor. Pukar. In Hindi, they say pukar. Let's go pukalia. Caught him. So, Anyway, I'm thinking austerity means, if we are to differentiate between austerities and penances, I would say that penance means a formally accepted program of difficulty. For instance, lying on a bed of nails, that we could say is a kind of penance. Or standing on one toe for 10,000 years, like Hiranyakashipu, standing on his toe tips, tips of his toes. Whereas austerity, if we're going to differentiate austerity from penance, then austerity could mean, in this case, accepting difficulties when they come without trying to make plans to counteract them. In material life, much of what we do is not to gain gross happiness, like eating nice food or going on holiday to the Adriatic coast. But a lot of the endeavors we make are for comfort. That means to offset the difficulties. Just like this. Many of you are fanning yourselves. So that is to make we're feeling too hot. So this is to make ourselves comfortable. Or maybe feeling, I'm sitting like this, so I'm getting a little stiff here, so let me just change my sitting posture a little bit. And without even thinking about it, many of the things we do are just to try to adjust our situation to make it more comfortable. Just like you maybe had a little itch in your ear. You probably were not even aware of it. I just noticed it. I'm not criticizing. I do criticize people a lot, but I wasn't that time. So I just saw you scratching like that. So you probably weren't even aware, but there was some little itch and went like that. So like that, a lot of things we do is just to try to negate the discomforts. And even in our dealings with others, we try to avoid dealing with others in such a way that they will, we try to avoid, just like if we've done something wrong, we try to avoid that person so that he doesn't chastise us. Or maybe if someone has to say something to the other to tell him he's done something wrong, we try to do it in a way which sounds nice. Maybe we may be thinking how to make him feel better, but we're also saying it to make ourselves feel better, because otherwise he may come back, well, who the hell are you to tell me? Like that. So we're afraid to speak very openly and clearly because we're afraid that person will come, hey, who are you? Don't say that to me. So we act in a very tolerant and reasonable manner with others, because then we hope that they will also deal like that with us. Well, what is called being reasonable often means to keep someone emotionally, to satisfy someone's false ego, actually. And in the hope that they will also not disturb our false ego. So these are various forms of sense gratification. It doesn't only mean this very gross forms of sense gratification. But austerity, that can mean to simply accept some difficult condition. And here it is specifically recommended for the purpose of spiritual advancement. In other words, just like, for instance, one has to, in our Krishna conscious movement, Prabhupada has written that all devotees should rise by 4 a.m. Now there's some trouble in doing so, because mostly we'd like to sleep more. Usually when it comes to about 3:59 or so, we think, if we've set an alarm for 3:59, then we think that, well, actually I'd like to sleep more. He's adding a little dramatics here. That's good. It helps to bring the point home better. But one who's determined to advance in spiritual life, he'll get up anyway. a devotee makes the sankalpa, the determination, the vow to rise early in the morning. And we know that that's going to be difficult sometimes, if not often. Very often. But anyway, we do that because we know that this is conducive for my spiritual advancement. We accept, or we have some service to do. We have to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And we know, we don't exactly know what kind of difficulty that is going to engender, but we know for sure that it's not going to be easy, that we're going to meet people who maybe insult us, or they just can't be bothered to speak to us, or who challenge us. So we know that there's going to be some difficulties, but a devotee accepts these difficulties because he knows they are conducive for spiritual advancement. So Rishabhdev is recommending that anyway in material life there is suffering, but accept that suffering and accept even more suffering which is directed towards the purpose of getting free from suffering eternally. And because we are used to sense gratification, we think that I should try to make life as comfortable as possible for myself. But this comfort, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, aram is haram. Aram means comfort, and haram means aram haram. Haram means abominable. So to try, just, I was giving this example, that every moment we're trying to make our body comfortable, our mind comfortable, but that propensity, of course there's no harm if you have a little itch in your ear to scratch, or if you're feeling a little hot to fan, but there should be a willingness in spiritual life to accept difficulty so that our spiritual practices can go on unimpeded. Now, for instance, again, rising early in the morning. This is very important in spiritual life because the Brahma Muhurta, that is the best time for executing spiritual activities. We find in all religious traditions, in Islam, there is, those of you who are from Bosnia, you know that there is the Hazan, and then they go early in the morning before sunrise. They're calling from the mosque, come and pray early in the morning before sunrise. I remember once I was in Bangladesh and they did the whole thing. What is it? You know what they say? Allah, 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 Muhammad, and all this stuff. So, and then the man said in Bengali over the loudspeaker in the village, "Uto, uto, get up, get up." It's the same thing in Sanskrit. Utishta, jagrata. Get up, wake up. Utishta jagrata prapya varanda bodhata. Get up, wake up, attain the boon of human life. So he said the same thing. Uto, uto. What is it? Gum teke namaz balo. Better than sleeping is to come and pray. So that's the, in Christian traditions also you'll find the monks. They'll rise even 3 o'clock in the morning, say their prayers. So this time of day is very good for spiritual advancement. So we may think that, well, I'll get up later and I'll do my prayers and it's all the same. But actually it's not. The early morning is better. So it's some difficulty. At first it seems like some difficulty to rise early in the morning. But then when one makes a habit of it, then one will never want to miss doing so. Even though it may be difficult because, especially maybe late at night or you can't sleep properly for some reason. But At the same time, that early morning is that there's nothing comparable to rising early and chanting Hare Krishna. And once it's gone, it's gone. It only comes once a day, and once it's gone, it's gone. So, and there's also, I mean, I'm just giving one example. There are so many examples, but especially reciting this Gurvashtakam early in the morning. There's one. Gurvashtaka means these prayers beginning Sangsara Dava Nala Lirdhalok. So this The composer, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, has given his blessing. He is such a powerful devotee that he can bless that anyone who recites these prayers, Shrimad Gaur Vashtakam Etaduchai Brahme Mahurte Patati Prayatnat Tameva, what is that? Tameva, no, I can't remember. Anyway, Tameva Labdvad Vrindavananata Sakshat Seva Labdvad. Anyway, sorry, I couldn't remember it properly. Anyway, the purport is that he says that anyone who rises and chants these prayers, Samsara Davana Lalita Loka, etc., during Brahma Muhurta, specifically says Brahma Muhurta, who carefully recites these prayers loudly, then he will attain direct service to Vrindavan Nath, Krishna in Vrindavan. So that's worth getting up for, isn't it? But it's difficult. It's difficult, but just see what we get in return. So Prabhupada is pointing out in this purport how materialistic people, they undergo very severe austerities anyway, like going on the train 2 hours. I don't think, you don't do that in Croatia. People don't do that, but in other countries it's very common. You'll see in Bombay, Calcutta, New York, London, people, they go 2 hours on the train, then they get another bus, and then they work, and then they come back again. And you see just like the trains in Bombay and Calcutta. You're feeling hot. Are you feeling hot? Well, can you imagine what it's like in being in a train carriage, squashed up like this, with the sun beating down, and that you do every day? Squashed up like this. I was once on a bus in Orissa, in the village, and it was just packed up with people. And people were just fainting. The women were fainting, and they had to stop the bus and let them out, and let the whole family out, and they're trying to revive them. It's like 40 degrees, and they're packed up in a bus. But people are doing this every day. And what is their consciousness going to be? And then they go to work in some factory, dark and noisy. What nasty austerities. And that's their human form of life. And then you get a dog life and a pig life and a cat life. And then an Indra life and then an ant life. So Rishabh Dev is pointing out that anyway we have to suffer, but we should direct our lives, regulate our lives to accept that kind of difficulty which will be conducive for getting free from all difficulties eternally, for entering into Brahmasukh, transcendental happiness. As one of my godbrothers commented, those who go to Mangalati, they enjoy Brahmasukh, spiritual happiness. And those who sleep during Mangalati, they enjoy Maya Sukh, the happiness of Maya. But that happiness is not happiness. That the only happiness in material life is relief from distress. And like I was saying, this driving fast cars, taking intoxication, having sex, it's also just relief. It relieves us from the consciousness of our suffering, because we get a high adrenaline boost, or we have lots of hormones moving around, and it gives some zoom, some sensation. So it's actually just a different sensation to that of just continuous consciousness of suffering. And that relief from that consciousness of suffering, we take that as happiness. It's a very sad situation that people take this as happiness. So Rishabh Dev is recommending here, Tapo Divyam. Anyway, we all have to suffer, but accept the divine austerity, that which is transcendental, that which will bring us ultimately to Krishna. So what are those difficulties? Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it very easy that there's not actually any severe difficulty. We read just now, it was Krishna Janmashtami, we were reading how Sutapa and Prishni, who were later Vasudeva and Devaki, they underwent severe austerities to get Krishna as their son, eating only dry leaves. So the organizers of this camp, they might think, well, that's in Shastra. Maybe next year we can save money. We'll just feed all the people dry leaves. You can say, see, it's in Shastra. But devotees will not agree. They will not come back again. See, there are so many dry leaves. You can just get some dry. They will not come if we offer dry leaves. Today's prasadam special, dry leaves. Tomorrow, dry leaves. We don't like to eat dry leaves. But little austerity means not to eat sausages. You can eat vegetarian sausages if you like sausages, but not meat sausages. Don't eat meat, don't drink wine. So that may seem very austere. Actually, it's not very austere. There are some austerities. Rising early in the morning, taking only Krishna prasad, it can be an austerity. It means there has to be sense, self-control, sense control. There may, if we don't have that sense control, if we think, well, I'll just be a vegetarian, then we, even being a vegetarian, then our tongue is always agitated. If we think, I'll eat vegetarian food, and whatever, it's, you can also buy from shops, it's all right. Then every time you go by, past an ice cream shop, then your senses will be, ah, ah, ah. Every time you see a soft drink stall, ah, ah, ah. The senses will be constantly agitated because there's plenty of vegetarian foods. And it depends how unstrict you are. Then cakes. Is this cake shop? Oh, it looks like a really nice cake. Is it vegetarian? Yeah, I think so. Okay, great. It's only got egg whites. Well, that's not really, see, the egg white, it's not really the chicken part, so. I think it's okay. What do you think? Time, place, and circumstance, Prabhu. There's always some excuse. That's the usual excuse. But even if we restrict ourselves to soft drinks or anything, well, you know, doesn't matter that much. But the thing is that then the senses will always be agitated. So it's actually very helpful for a devotee to follow quite strictly. That means only to take prasad at regulated times. That's actually very good for health also. Apart from anything else, it's good to have a healthy body to serve Krishna. But if we have the habit of, that's a karmic habit promoted in the modern age, that there should always be some sensation for the tongue. Tea, coffee, Coca-Cola, wine, biscuits, chewing gum, cigarettes. In India they have pan also. So there should always be something on the tongue. When the tongue is there, and if you put something tasty on the tongue, it's enjoyable. So why not constantly have something on the tongue? So it's like that, you know, a cigarette, and then a cup of tea, and always some. And this way the senses always remain agitated. But if one has the habit of taking only Krishna prasad, even if at the time of taking Krishna prasad, we really pack it away, and we eat all luscious foods, but still it's only Krishna prasad, and that habit of taking only Krishna prasad at regulated times, that will very much help us to control our senses, and our mind won't be agitated all the time. I need something for my tongue all the time. And even when we, just like I was talking about these advertisements on the billboards and then on the TV, it means it keeps people in a, karmis, because they're open to this, then their mind is always agitated. Ah, buy this, buy that. I have to have this, I have to have that. But a devotee, because he's turned his mind off to this, doesn't even look at the billboards. Of course, sometimes you can't avoid it, but even if it's not, the devotee is, in his consciousness, it's turned off. This is not something for me. But a materialist is always looking for something for my sense gratification. What have they got on this billboard? What are they offering? It could be something good. They're always hopeful of getting something that will increase their sense gratification. How wonderful. And so their mind is always agitated by material desires, more and more and more. They can never attain peace. Whereas a devotee just doesn't take any... He knows. Advertisement means nonsense. That word is there, reclama. So, in English we have a word, reclaim. That means you work like a hog or a dog. Actually, the hogs and dogs don't work, but anyway. You work in a condition as miserable as that of hogs and dogs. They give you some money, and then they offer you all these useless things, and they reclaim the money. That's a reclama. To reclaim all the money, the little bit of money they gave you for working, and then they reclaim it all by giving you some useless things. Just like children, you give them some useless little toy. So they're offering you this, so many things. Most, it's childish, just like they advertise tires, car tires, which is just some rubber tires. But they advertise it with all beautiful women, and they give the idea that if you use these car tires, you become very sexy, which is ridiculous. It's just a car tire is the most plain, uninteresting thing in the world, probably. But they're advertising it with pictures of beautiful women sitting on the car with the car tires. And then people think, if I use Pirelli tires, then that makes me very sexy. It's childish. It's so absurd. So a devotee, by understanding with intelligence, he doesn't become victimized by the agents of Maya, who simply want to agitate our senses all the time, so that we become puppets of Maya. But rather, a devotee accepts the rules and regulations of devotional service, which means there are many restrictions. Don't go to the cinema. Don't watch TV. Don't rise, or do rise earlier than 4 o'clock, which means don't rise later than 4 o'clock. So it may seem, life is already so tough, so why don't we just have some relief, some relaxation? You know, just working so hard all day, why can't I just relax and turn on the TV? But Rishabhdev is warning us that that will actually lead to our more suffering. So if we think that is enjoyment, better accept the austerity of not accepting that enjoyment, so that we can purify our consciousness. Of course, simply accepting difficulty, that in itself will not purify the consciousness. We also need to undertake the positive activities of Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting about Krishna. But at the same time, one thing is, if we're engaged in sense gratification, we won't have time, we'll have neither the time nor the inclination to take up activities of Krishna consciousness. And another point is that if we are engaged in sense gratification, then we can't become Krishna conscious. The two things don't mix. We can't have a hedonistic life and become Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious means Vairagya Vidya. It's on the platform of renunciation and knowledge. So one should accept some difficulties for the sake of advancing in Krishna consciousness. And actually, for a devotee, it's not very difficult. Not very difficult. Rising early, it's a matter of practice. And then not indulging the tongue in so many different things. It's a matter of practice. And when one sees the result, that, well, actually, this helps me to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness more and more and more. And as we appreciate more and more what is the what is the benefit of becoming Krishna conscious, then naturally we want to become more and more Krishna conscious. So it becomes like second nature. Then we don't think of indulging in sense gratification. Of course, Maya is always there. It's a foolish person who will say, "I have now conquered over Maya." Only a foolish person will say that, because Maya is much stronger than us. We cannot conquer over Maya. But if we take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna will help us to conquer Maya. Always retaining the humble position, not thinking, "Now I am very strong." But rather, even if a devotee is following rules and regulations very strictly, he shouldn't think, "Well, now I'm very strong." But rather he should think that I'm so weak that I need to follow these rules and regulations very strictly. He shouldn't think, "I'm so strong, therefore I'm following these rules and regulations." Another very interesting point from this verse is how relevant it is to society today. Prabhupada is giving the example of people going on trains, working. And this Rishabhdev spoke, this is some thousands of years ago. But it's absolutely relevant to life today. It may seem even more relevant than it was at the time Rishabhdev spoke it, because Kali Yuga is so intense. So it's not that the message of Shastra is something outdated, that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, but now it's not necessary. Now we should adopt something else. But it's everything in Shastra is absolutely relevant to society today. Sometimes people think that, well, in Shastra it's described about the Vedic social system, but that doesn't apply today. Well, in one sense that's true, it doesn't apply today because people have become demoniac and they don't follow the Vedic social system. But if we think that it's outdated, that is incorrect. Because the Vedic social system is given by Krishna and perfectly addresses the requirements of people who have taken male and female bodies respectively. Different roles are ascribed to them due to the inherent psychophysical differences that accrue to people who get either male bodies or female bodies. Men and women are different, just in case you notice, because nowadays they try to make it all the same. They dress the same, and the women cut their hair short, and didn't see them shaving their heads so much, but Prabhupada said that once as a joke on the airplane. He told his servant who was sitting next to him, the stewardess was there, Prabhupada said to his servant, "Tell her if she wants to be equal to men, she can shave her head like us." But he didn't tell her. The devotee was too shy to tell her. But anyway, there are differences. And it's not just that the body is different, but the psychology is different. Men and women now they're trying to make it all the same. That women should be corporate bosses and they should be soldiers in the army, and all this kind of thing. But women's nature is different. The women, they like to have children and cuddle them and pet them and goo-goo them and all this kind of thing. And men are not so much inclined to that. Although nowadays the men, they also push the trolley and all this kind of thing with the baby in. But naturally, if you see that when they go in the shops, the boys, they like to buy toy cars and guns and G.I. Joe dolls, and the girls like to buy just regular dolls, isn't it? So there's a natural tendency, and Vedic culture, just that Vedic culture that recognizes that and addresses that in the way people are to behave, so for the ultimate spiritual benefit of both, material and spiritual. So that's just an example of how people say that, well, you know, actually this Vedic knowledge, it's okay, but nowadays we're more advanced, so we don't need all that stuff. You know, now we have We'd better to follow modern social roles. But modern social roles means modern society is set up so that everyone can become a gross sense enjoyer and go to hell. So it's really best not to follow modern social roles, because then you end up with the, you know, you end up with all the rest of the people. That modern society is set up for going to hell, so you end up with them there. And Vedic roles, Vedic society is set up for purification and going to Krishna. So it's very interesting that this verse, it exactly addresses the condition of modern society, how people are working hard and living lives of uncontrolled sense gratification and very degraded, eating stool. How for the jiva who is supposed to be living with Krishna and dancing with Krishna to come to the condition of eating stool, how degraded. But Rishabh Devi is saying, don't be like that in your human form. And just see now how in the modern age, people, among certain people, the more degraded they are, they think that's more acceptable, that's more prestigious. There are certain groups of people, just like Hell's Angels or something, they deliberately try to be very gross. These football hooligans, they're deliberately very violent and gross. So, the average man in the West, he wants to see his son. I want to see my son that he can, you know, he can drink plenty of beer and wine, and he should be a real man. Very gross. Gross sense gratification. So devotees, they are warned by Rishabhdev, and it's not only is it relevant to today, but it's probably more relevant today than it was even at the time than Rishabhdev, definitely, than the time Rishabhdev spoke it. So this Shastra, it is relevant in all times, places and circumstances, and especially Prabhupada has presented these wonderful books to us. This is so wonderful. We can take great pleasure in studying Srila Prabhupada's books and drinking in this knowledge. You like to drink? Want to drink? Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Drink this nectar, the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam, right up to your death. I'll drink and I'll drink and I'll drink right up till I die. That's what Bhagavatam says. Alayam, it means up till the time we leave the body. So drink. Drink this nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is real intoxication. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Yeah, please. How to find a good enough alarm clock? You can use 20, but even if we're determined not to wake up, exactly. Then we can sleep even if someone starts this pneumatic drill next to us. Prabhupada told that story of the lazy man, that the house is burning down. Well, we'll just turn over. Anyway, what was your question?
I mean, so many times we are able to hear inspiring lectures and we are reading by ourselves, and it goes on and on. Still, so many devotees are somehow getting less interested in Krishna consciousness, and they're leaving, and it's a continuous process.
They come in, they get initiated, and they go out.
Yes. So, and nowadays, as you have noticed and mentioned many times, there is even not much pressure, like, I mean, 10 years or 20 or 30 years ago. A devotee doesn't have to do a lot of things and doesn't have to...
No one's pushing them to surrender.
Yes, but still, why...
Well, that's why I chose this verse, actually, and that's why I've taken it upon myself. People call me a fanatic and a fundamentalist and all these things. Actually, I'm just preaching the way that I always did, and that's the way that everyone used to do in ISKCON, because that's the way Prabhupada preached, and we just heard that we were supposed to preach the way Prabhupada preached. But I'm especially doing it because it's to like counteract all the weakness and looseness I'm deliberately trying to speak very strongly and very clearly, so, but I sometimes I feel like it's a lonely job. Because nowadays it's all just bliss and bhav, and so I see I'm trying to make the foundation a little strong. My god brothers are building up higher. They're talking on higher topics. I'm just trying to get some basic lower topics, some basic things, because it's also nice to talk about the gopis and all these things. It's pleasing to hear, but after all, it may not be so meaningful if we go away from the camp and we sleep every morning till 7 o'clock. It may not have so much relevance to, or how much, what is needed for our practical spiritual advancement. So I request you all, just follow these basic principles which Prabhupada gave us. Rise early in the morning. That means you have to take rest early also, as much as possible. If you have 2-year-old children or less, then it may be difficult because children are not regulated. They have no sense of time, and they especially like to scream in the middle of the night. I know, I've lived in many grihastas' homes. So there may be various difficulties. There are many difficulties of life in the modern world, but try and seriously to rise early in the morning, chant the rounds very carefully, read Prabhupada's books, please. That will give us strength. That will help us very much. And associate with devotees who have faith in Krishna and Prabhupada. Nowadays there's a lot of propaganda going around that Prabhupada made mistakes, or Prabhupada said that, but you know, he was an Indian and he didn't really understand. So many rascal things are going around. It's very important to keep associating. If we want Krishna, if we're actually serious to understand Krishna, if we don't want Krishna consciousness as a kind of hobby, if we want to go to Krishna, if we want to get out of this disgusting material world, then we have to be very serious. And to maintain that seriousness, it is important to associate with devotees who are very serious. Don't become another joined. I took the step of getting initiated. I mean, what a vow. No meat, no gun, no intoxication, no lessons. It's a very serious vow. And then after some time, you don't see them. You come to the summer camp and they're there on the... Oh, they're having a summer... Oh, embarrassed. They're there on the beach. Not in our camp, in the other... In the Karmi camp. So, don't become another statistic, please. What can I say? Life is in your hands, ultimately. Prabhupada gave the example. That we may learn how to fly. We're taught... Pilot school, they're taught how to fly a plane. But then if you go up in a single person plane, ultimately you have to fly it yourself. There comes a point when you're alone, you have to make your own decisions. We have to be capable. So no one forces us to fall down or to leave Krishna consciousness. Maya is pushing, but no one is forcing. So, please be very serious. Why not do this? Why not take it up? Take a vow that I must be strong. Don't be fooled into thinking that it's not enough just to come to a summer camp and to come to maybe once a week or once a month some Bhakti Sangha program and then just do whatever we like and eat ice cream and maybe cakes and listen to some Kami music and watch a bit. These things will... It's just like you listen to some Kami music and it sounds very nice. There are so many songs. It's not very harmful. It's very harmful. Because it reintroduces into our consciousness the idea that there is some kind of happiness apart from Krishna consciousness. There is something important. There is something meaningful. There is something worthwhile other than Krishna consciousness. Actually, if we want to go back to Godhead, we have to be what? the Kamis would call a fanatic. Because that absorption, we're talking about absorption in Krishna consciousness, that means no other thing. Always think, Manmana, always think of me, Krishna says. So we have to practice like that. If we don't practice to become strong, then we're never going to become strong. It's not possible. It's not possible that by following in a very whimsical manner that we'll ever attain Krishna. It's not possible. So decide, sit and think about it. What are we doing? What if we've come to this moment? What for? We've come for Krishna. So anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. We should accept everything that is favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness and reject everything unfavorable. And nowadays especially, we have to be intelligent enough to understand that there are many things, even in ISKCON, which are being promoted and disseminated, that are actually not very favorable for making advancement. These ideas, you just relax and be Krishna conscious, or you have to go through something else, astrology or psychology or something, and then you need this, and then Krishna consciousness second. It's all balderdash. Balderdash means nonsense. It's an expressive way. It's another way. There are so many things, gobbledygook, and there are so many different words for nonsense. Prabhupada liked the word nonsense. It means no sense, which exactly describes everything except pure Krishna consciousness. Even mixed Krishna consciousness, it doesn't make any sense. If by practicing Krishna consciousness seriously we can go to Krishna, then why should we practice in a mixed way? It doesn't make any sense. Because Krishna is not mixed. He is as He is. He is the transcendental autocrat. He has His... He makes the rules. If we follow them, then we share in His transcendental bliss. If we don't, then we remain in this material world. So please don't mix up... Don't get cheated by so many bogus things being offered in the name of Krishna consciousness. Well, where is? Because there are some people here who don't understand Croatian also, aren't there? There are. Okay, speak loudly, because just shout it out as loud as you. Okay, pass it over.
So we were speaking about, and in verses mentioned about hawks and dogs and stool eating, and actually it's incredibly that there is one study when sociologist, he makes some research. So actually he gave some example about how people are the most morbid creatures. He said that the man is the only living entity who takes the animal, cuts the body, the flesh of the animal. Then he takes out the intestines, which intestines means stool is inside.
Yeah.
So he's...
We're also stool eaters, and sausage
then,
eaters.
And then, yes, and then they're putting this, pushing this meat inside, and then people all around us eat this, and they think that's normal. So my question is, how is possible that that people are so degraded, and it's so difficult to explain, actually, to them, to understand such a logic.
Why are people so degraded?
How jiva can become so degraded?
Krishna bhuli se jivan adi bahimuk. When we forget Krishna, then we take up opposite consciousness. It's inconceivable. How could a jiva who's meant to be pure and enjoying with Krishna become so degraded? It's inconceivable. We should ask ourselves, we're here. What did I do? Why am I so fallen? The penalty of forgetting Krishna. Such a horrible condition we come to. Any other question? Maybe you all want to get a little fresh air before the next session. Please.
Is there...
Camels work hard. Camels existence. They're pulling the trucks, or in India you see they pull the, they're walking along, and then you see them eating the thorn bushes. They eat side to side.
Don't you think it can actually push majority of people away from Krishna consciousness?
What's that?
These strong words.
I have faith in Srila Prabhupada, who always quoted these things. He made so many devotees. He didn't push people away. He brought people in. It may push away people who are determined to enjoy sense gratification. Natevidu swartagatinghi vishnam durashya ye bahir. Now what is that verse? That Matiya na krishne paratasvatova. Persons who are determined not to surrender to Krishna, they will never do so, even by getting good advice. But persons who are a little sincere, when they hear the truth spoken, they will recognize it and appreciate it. And that was the case with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada went down into the hippies and told them no illicit sex. They didn't like it. Some of them took it up. The truth is powerful. This is Krishna. You're saying it will drive people away from Krishna consciousness, but this is Krishna consciousness. This is the Supreme Lord speaking. So we have to present it, and people can either accept it or not. But this is Krishna consciousness. Don't think that there is Krishna consciousness without this. That's not Krishna consciousness. Krishna himself speaks, Namang duskrityano murha. Those who do not surrender to me are rascals and fools. So don't think that Krishna consciousness means only dancing with the gopis. People who want that without Namang duskrityano murha, then that's not Krishna consciousness. That means they want to simply take Krishna as some object of sense gratification. So I think maybe your concept of Krishna consciousness is not very clear. Okay, I'm going to finish there with a reclama. I have to reclaim some money from your pockets, but I'm not going to give you puzzle. It's not a puzzle reclama, but something of value. That means I've been writing books based on what Srila Prabhupada has taught us. Prabhupada has said that my disciples will write purports on my purports. So you are asking about how to be serious, how to remain in Krishna consciousness. So I've written various books, and several of them are specifically to help devotees to have a strong attachment to Prabhupada and the process of Krishna consciousness. And many devotees have told me that reading these books has helped them to become strong in their faith and strong in their practice of Krishna consciousness. So could you I'd just like to tell you about some of them. This is Brahmacharya and Krishna consciousness, which every devotee is supposed to be a brahmachari. Brahmacharya is an ashram, and it's also a state of mind. It means the brahmacharity iti brahmacharya. Absorption in spiritual life, that is brahmacharya. So this book describes brahmacharya life in Krishna consciousness. This is glorification of Srila Prabhupada. Unfortunately, nowadays, as I was saying, we hear gross and subtle minimization of Srila Prabhupada. If you're disturbed by that, this is an antidote. How to practice Krishna consciousness very seriously. Just the basic principles. What to do. Living at home, what to do. How to do puja according to the Gaudiya Vaishnava system. How to use a japa mala. What is the meaning of ISKCON, what ISKCON is supposed to be. What does it mean to accept a guru and ISKCON and all these different topics. This is in Hrvatsky. Moje se chanye na Srila Prabhupada, something like that. Is it okay? Because many devotees, they ask me about my personal memories of Prabhupada, so here it is in a book. Prabhupada Remembrances. This is the pastimes of a very great and inspiring preacher of Krishna consciousness, Rasikananda Prabhu, who was preaching in Orissa, an area of India, about 400 years ago. His wonderful adventures. And this is an edition of the Ramayana in simple English, so that we can hear about the pastimes of Lord Rama and be purified and edified. Edified, you know what that means? It means, edification means we will get instruction. So these are the books. I usually sign if people want to take. You can take them here if you like. And there's also a book table outside. So I request you to buy these books. There will be benefit. It's, you could also spend the money on Fanta or something like this. But it would be better to buy these books. And also, if you don't have a full set of Prabhupada's books in your home, definitely you should get. I was just saying how, read Srimad Bhagavatam, this is so wonderful, this is Prabhupada's great gift to us. Drink the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. How many of you have a full set of Bhagavatam in your homes? Not so many. Then your home is incomplete. You should definitely all get a... Definitely. Why don't you all... I'll give you all a... You're asking, you know, devotees go away and this and that. So my advice to you is, if you want to fade away, space out, bloop, get in Maya, etc. Okay, let's make a deal here. Do it. Alright, okay? It's all on tape now. But we're making a little compromise here. I don't usually like to compromise. But if you're determined to float away from Krishna consciousness, bloop out, space out, etc., etc., just I would like to give one condition first. That you purchase one set of Bhagavatam and read it from beginning to end. And then only. After doing that, if you're still thinking about blooping, come and see me and I'll give you Chaitanya Charitamrita to read also. It's all good advice. It may sound funny, but it's all very good advice. We should organize just like some competitions, knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam, and you all have to pay like 100 kunas to take it, and then the winner gets a free trip to Mayapur, something like that. So there's some incentive. How many of you went to Mayapur? You should all go. You also went to Mayapur, really? You're a very lucky little girl. I didn't go till I was, let me see, 19. You liked it there? I like it there too. It's a better place than Croatia. No bad feeling towards Croatia, but Mayapur is better. Okay, if anyone would like the books, please come and get them. Hare Krishna.